Now, the next subject is how to teach the faith. You notice immediately, this is a practical question. How? It is interesting that in the United States, the single type of book which has most titles, the most popular books in the United States are the How to Do It books. We are a practical people. Other people will speculate. And we, now what do I do about it? How do I put it into practice? Here the question is, how to teach the faith? First, let me, before I get into my subject, spend a little more time on the introduction. You will not teach the faith unless first you have it. And the more deeply and clearly and firmly you believe, the more effective you will be in teaching the faith. That is why deep as the Lord will allow with the talent and grace He gives us, provided our own grasp is deep, we will be able to teach it. And much of what I will say will be not unnecessary, but quite dispensable, provided a person has a strong grasp of the faith. In fact, the recommendations that I'm going to make are mainly recommendations for the teacher, for the one who is to communicate to others. Having said that, let me first note that we must immediately make a distinction in how to teach the faith among three different kinds of people to whom we want to communicate the faith. And the church, especially since the Council, and particularly our present Holy Father, time and again insists on the importance of distinguishing among three ways of teaching the faith. One is called pre-evangelization. The second is called evangelization. And the third is technically called catechesis. They are big words. They may sound sophisticated. Substitute A, B, and C. But whatever you call them, there are three different kinds of people to whom we are to teach the faith. Pre-evangelization, evangelization, and catechesis. Let me first identify each class of person and then go back in some depth and explain how to teach the faith to each class. First, pre-evangelization. To those who need to be disposed to believe. How to teach the faith to those who need to be properly disposed to believe. If we go back to the Gospels, we see that many people to whom Christ preached were not disposed to believe. And in the United States, the number of such people, I think, is legion. The reason for their not being disposed to believe is because maybe of prejudice. What they've heard about the faith has always been contrary. The other day in New York, I got on the subway, I looked around, there was one seat available that I could sit down. A sad-looking man, I thought I'd sit down and open my suitcase and do some work in preparation for class. 35-minute ride on the subway. As I sat down, he glared at me. And as soon as I sat down, he got up. And if looks could kill, I would be dead. We did not engage in conversation. I don't think that man was disposed to believe. Some people are not disposed to believe because they think that every believer is, well, still in the infant stage of his development. Grown-up people graduate from the infancy of belief. When I deal with intellectuals, strangers say to me, I just assume, they are not disposed to believe. And when I find that they already believe, well, I show my surprise. Intellectuals, academicians. I gave a lecture at the University of Michigan some years ago, and I was staying overnight with a chaplain to the Catholic students. And after the lecture in the rectory, the Monsignor there told me that many young Catholics give up their faith when they go to the state university. And sometimes they come to him and tell them, or he looks them up, that they have stopped believing. They are no longer disposed to believe. So he says, if they let me, I ask them to sit down. And my first question is, how is your sex life? I know almost no exceptions, he says. Those who have lost the faith or are not disposed to believe are uncomfortable with the Church's and Christ's teaching on chastity. So, first class, pre-evangelization. Second, evangelization. How to teach the faith to those who are disposed to believe, but do not know what to believe. For the first class, the pre-evangelization, my problem is to convince a person why he should believe. The second class, evangelization, the problem is to teach them what they should believe. They are ready. And again, our Lord, remember, more than once, Lord, who is this Son of Man that I can believe in him? Remember? People who are ready to believe, they don't know what to believe. And in today's world, including today's church, this is no small problem. They're bursting with belief. They just want to believe all over the place. They latch on to all sorts of cults and fanatical groups, but they have not been taught what to believe that Christ has revealed. Third class. And as I said, we're going to go over each class afterwards in more depth. I don't think there is any single, whatever we call these, conferences, no single conference in the whole lineup of all the courses we've taken for several years that is more important than this one. How to teach the faith. And that's for everybody. The third, catechesis. Here, the problem is to direct our teaching of the faith to those who know why they should believe, they are disposed. What to believe? They know the essentials of the faith. But they need to acquire an understanding of their faith. Here the focus of teaching of the faith is on the how. How am I to understand this faith? All three levels, in my estimation, need to be looked at for even the most promising, say, candidate for a religious community. We are sometimes surprised and even shocked. Catholics may believe they enter the religious life, but after a while you find out there's some one area of their faith they're not so sure they're supposed to believe. Or they may have certain moral difficulties or problems. So that even in terms of disposition, and certainly in terms of the what, and finally, the how. Let's go back over each, A, B, and C. I would like to now address myself to the practical dealing with people on each of these three levels. First level, those who need to be disposed to believe. You assume they have problems with believing. Try to find out first what their problem is, or problems, as the case may be. Since our last class, I had a doctor, a medical man from California, visit me. He was staying with relatives in New York. They recommended he is looking me up. He is a specialist in, he's both in medicine and in psychiatry. And he was thinking of becoming a Catholic. His relatives, at least through marriage, some of them are Catholic. He thought I might help. It was about 5:15 in the afternoon when I met him. And 8:30, I missed my dinner. He missed his dinner. I didn't even tell the cook that I usually to save me a dinner. But I saw this man had problems. And his basic problems were intellectual. He could not accept the church's teaching on chastity. He knew so much psychiatry that it was a problem. So find out what the problem is. Now, some people are slow to reveal themselves. Let me put it this way. After 35 years in the priesthood, I think every problem with the faith is at root a moral problem. somehow the will is not fully resigned to God's will. And so the mind then rationalizes to defend, well, their conduct, their behavior. So first find out what their problem is and at least face them with the problem. And they will tell you that they're perfectly disposed. Most people won't want to admit that they're ill-disposed. Then, they have to be helped to see the value of believing. And with people like that, you've got to be very, you might say, down to earth and show what advantage there is to them. You might wonder why I'm talking about this pre-evangelization to people who are candidates, say, for religious communities. I know what I'm saying. There are areas that some people have for years never fully resigned themselves to accept on faith. For example, a cross in their life. Or the fact that they are not so gifted as somebody else. Or some traumatic experience in their early days, or whatever. Try to convince them that through faith they will become more happy. We all know the statement of St. Paul, where he describes faith as the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. We all have desires, and our desires will not be fully satisfied in this world. What people need is a stronger faith to trust in God that He will give them what He promised. And once people resign themselves to certain things they're not going to get in this life. I was about 3 years old when I began to resign myself to the fact that I did not have a father. And only because of my mother's strong faith, because you really lack something. And I saw others, and I think I may have mentioned this on one occasion when I got into some kind of a quarrel with my buddies, all of us about 8 or 9 years old, and one of them told the father that I had said or done something which wasn't true. The father came out and just slapped me down. Did I tell you this? And I remember I was about 8 years old. And there were tears in my eyes, and I say, "Mister, you wouldn't be doing this to me if I had a father." And he wouldn't. Because from my mother told me of my dad. He wouldn't let him. This is much deeper than most of us realize. People, in other words, to be convinced that they can be happy. I have yet to meet an unbeliever who was happy. If you meet one, call me up. Collect. And there's unhappiness in most people's lives. To assure them that if they believe, really believe, that their whatever it is, problem may not dissolve, or the cross won't be removed, but they will be able to be happy. I would strongly recommend that people be encouraged to pray. In other words, if people are to be properly disposed to believe, they must pray and ask God to help them see the value of faith and to ask God for the light and strength they need to believe. Let me tell you, on this first level of pre-evangelization, there are not a few such people in religious communities, young ones, postulants, novices, and no matter what their age, there can be vacuums in their belief where they are not fully disposed to accept or take from God certain things which, if they did believe, they would, or if they accepted, they would be willing to believe. Pre-evangelization is to make the faith attractive, make it appealing. Second, evangelization. I would say that most religious, or most young people entering the religious life, are well enough disposed to believe. But they can be dismally ignorant about what they're supposed to believe. And I'm told dismally ignorant. People don't know the Ten Commandments, don't know even the names of the seven sacraments. For example, a high school teacher told me that when they asked for the names of the seven sacraments, they got marriage in there, all right, but they also got divorce as one of the seven sacraments. Well, they see so much of it. So evangelization means to inform people what they are to believe. Here, of course, we should have a fair knowledge of the principal articles of the faith. I think in most cases we can just assume this is true. People on every age level, background, intelligence, education have been deprived of a great deal of knowledge about what to believe. I recommend, and strongly recommend, that you either find or put together a faith IQ test. Do you have any in stock? I have. Didn't we have one once? 100 basic questions? Okay. And you can make some up of your own. In other words, to find out where the person stands, because not everybody is in the same position. And this, depending on the numbers you're dealing with, if it's just one or two, maybe no problem. But the larger the number you're dealing with, and they're strangers until you get to know them, you may, as a matter of fact, be teaching things to, say, out of seven people. Number three may know all that he or she needs to know at their stage and age. Number four may be dismally ignorant. So find out how much they know to begin with, and they differ. And that's the difference between teaching in a group and teaching individually. And where you cannot teach the group, say as a cluster of people, at least meet with them separately. You can always give them things to read or study on their own. We're developing, I think I told you, a national program for home study, which is also conference study, to learn the faith. So know where the persons are when you want to teach them, because they won't all be on the same level. Then, find out what, for example, what area of their faith they mostly need knowledge on. I would say this is a lifetime responsibility of superiors, of bishops, and of the Holy Father. There is so much confusion in the Catholic Church today that people simply must be taught. This is what the Catholic Church teaches, and not that. I think I told you about the classes I was giving, my first lecture in a large Midwestern diocese on the bishop's invitation, where I explained on the board about what happened with consecration. That at the moment of consecration, the bread and wine ceased to be bread and wine. And I put a little chart on the board, and the man in the back of the room, the priest, he's a raw priest, he said, "No, they don't. The bread and wine remain." And all you need is to have teachers who are confused or have even lost their faith themselves. It's no wonder that others who are instructed by them will also be confused. So, the confusion among religious today, and the more they read, the more they hear, the more they see, the more likely they are to be confused and need to be evangelized. We didn't used to talk this language. But we're living in a very, very de-Christianized society. We are. Okay. In fact, when I'm in church, frequently I just turn my eyes away when I see the priest walking in front of the tabernacle and just doesn't bother genuflecting. And I don't think that Father Donnie would mind hearing this, but 3 weeks ago, Sister Priscilla, the provincial of the Missionaries of Charity that are coming into Chicago, they were due on the 10th. What's today, the 12th? Well, I hear they're coming now on the 19th. It may be postponed once more. But Sister Priscilla in New York asked me, could I recommend a good confessor? Because Mother Teresa insists only tried and true confessors. So, when I came to Chicago, I said, "Father Donnie, would you mind being confessor to the sisters?" Well, he didn't expect it. So, of course, I had to get her approval. And she knows Father Downey. She said, "Okay." One confessor in 1 month can confuse a whole community. So evangelization. Number 3, and this is the big one, catechesis. What does catechesis mean? It means teaching the faith to those who know why they should believe and what to believe, but who need to inquire an understanding of how they are to understand or take their faith. And here I have 6 things they need to be taught. Each answers to the question, how? Notice these are people who have the faith. They do believe, so they don't have to be evangelized, or much less still pre-evangelized. But they need to learn how first. How to understand the meaning of their faith. Or how to grasp the meaning of their faith. Secondly, they need to learn how to use their faith in prayer. To coin a verb, how they are to pray their faith. Everything we believe is meant to be food for prayer. Everything. And some people, after 30 years in the religious life, don't know what to do with their faith in prayer. How? How to pray their belief. Third, they need to learn how to share. Because while you don't go around, for example, as a young novice, and try to evangelize your fellow novices, you've got to use your head. Nevertheless, there is such a thing as sharing your faith with others by engaging, for example, in spiritual conversation. Some people are tongue-tied, have a deep faith, they just don't know how to talk about what they believe with others. And on entering the religious life, it's a different atmosphere. In the world, you just don't talk about certain things, it's assumed. Religion and politics, for many people, are the two forbidden subjects, even in good families. Or if you don't talk about religious subjects in the religious life, well, how can the faith survive? So they have to be taught how to share their faith. Now they're going to be awkward and seem pious and saccharine and all kinds of things. These are amateurs. And others have to be patient with them. There she is again. She's giving us a homily. Or told, stop the sermonizing. And that can freeze a person for life. You got to be clever. At any rate, third, taught how to share their faith with others. And not go around asking people, do you believe in the Trinity? Yes, I believe in the Trinity. Certain things you have to assume. Fourth, and this is the hard one, they have to learn how to live their faith in practice. Remember Christ's parting words to his disciples. Go and therefore teach them all that I have taught you, that's faith. But what? To observe. The faith is to be lived. We're not to live the faith from the neck up, just in our minds. For example, we believe in the incarnation. This would make a good talk. How to live the incarnation. What are you talking about? I repeat. We're not only to believe in the incarnation, we are to live the incarnation. If I believe this is the Son of God, it's perfectly obvious. Common sense tells me that if God became man, he wants me to learn from that human being So I begin to live the incarnation when I learn how Jesus lived and how I am to follow in his footsteps. Fifth, they are to learn how to grow in their faith. We're forever talking about how to grow in, you name it, patience, charity, kindness, humility. I wish somebody would once in a while tell people how to grow in the faith. Needless to say, you don't grow in any virtue unless you first practice it. Sixth need for those who are to be catechized. They need to learn how to preserve their faith. Is that ever important? We know how to tell people how to preserve their chastity. All right. Their faith is more important than their chastity, because if the faith gets weak, forget about chastity. You don't preserve yourself in anything unless you first appreciate what you've got. You won't treasure it. And if we have safety deposit boxes for money, we should have safety deposit boxes for our faith. And if we have armed guards protecting money, for example, when it's picked up at a bank, we should be armed. Reread the two letters of Peter about the false prophets in his day. And there are a lot of false prophets in our day. And finally, how to deepen their faith convictions. In other words, how to become more sure, more convinced that what I believe is really true. Why is the need of faith so important? Because without faith, we can have no hope, and without faith, no charity. We cannot hope to obtain from God what he promises us unless we first believe the foundation for everything we hope for is our faith. The motive for our love of God and our love of neighbor is our faith. No one loves an unknown God. And no one will love his unlovable neighbor unless faith tells us that's the condition of our salvation. I use four F's: faith, food, foundation, and fuel. Faith provides food for the mind. Faith provides the foundation for the desires of our will. And faith provides the fuel for our love. Our minds must be fed on the truth of God's revelation. Our will to sustain our desires must be founded on what we believe. And our love must be constantly supported by our belief that God wants to be loved, must be loved, and tells us how to love. The crisis in the world today is a crisis of faith. When people lose their faith, they lose their reason. Now the meaning. What is faith? Well, we should distinguish faith as a virtue and faith as an action. Faith as a virtue is the supernatural power received at baptism, which enables us to believe all that God has revealed. It is therefore a power. When we are baptized, we receive three virtues infused into our souls: faith, hope, and charity. Faith is the ability which the mind receives to accept whatever God has revealed. Faith is an action, or as an act. And this is the Church's definition. Faith is the assent of the intellect to what God has revealed, not because revealed truths are self-evident, but because of the authority of God, who can neither deceive nor be deceived. In other words, when we believe, we assent, we accept with our minds what God has revealed, simply because He revealed it, and not because we see or grasp what God has revealed. In other words, we submit our minds on His Word. Now the scope of what we are to teach. Notice the question is how to teach. The purpose, therefore, is first of all to teach others what they are to believe. In other words, God has revealed many things, and in today's world, many people are simply not taught even what to believe. They don't know.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.